10 hours straight. He's a machine. I know kung fu.
Show me.
Hello, and welcome to Achievement Hunting 101. This is level 297. I am Big L, and with me this week we have Wild West.
What's going on, guys?
Hello. And Koosh Moose is on a vacation, so all of our listeners have been chomping at the bit to get on the show. So we have a newcomer to the panel. He is Nerdy Neo. Hello.
Hey, glad to be here tonight. I've been hoping to make it on here for a while now, so thank you for inviting me. I'm happy to be here. Looking forward to a great discussion.
Okay, well, you sound enthusiastic. That's what we like to hear.
He had his coffee before we started.
Yeah.
I actually don't like coffee.
Oh, yeah? Well, what's your caffeine poison of choice?
I don't drink a lot, but my favorite drink, like, of all time is Mountain Dew Code Red.
Oh, good choice.
I'm sorry I asked. So, before we get into the nitty gritty, tell us who you are, what your gaming background is, all that fun stuff. Ooh, whatever you want to tell us, do tell us.
Okay, well, hello, everyone. You might know me as my gamer tag is XNeo21X, which Big L gives me a hard time about the X's at the beginning and the end lot of the times. Because when I got my gamer tag in 2006, Neo21 was already taken, and they have done like nothing with it since. So I know I could change it to that now since they changed it to like the Discord type where I have the numbers at the end, but I don't want that. So I decided to stick with XNeo21X. But you'll also see me in Discord as Nerdy Neo, as that is the name of the YouTube channel I started back in June. And I wanted to relate, since I do nothing but talk about video games, I wanted to relate it to my gaming persona. So yeah, I was a Nintendo kid. And then in high school, I switched over to Xbox because all of my friends were playing Halo. And I played a heck of a lot of Halo 1. And we were all super excited for Halo 2, but it came out and we were not big fans of it. So after a couple weeks, we went back to playing Halo 1 until Halo 3 came out.
Really?
Yeah.
Like the maps and stuff?
Just how it, like the feel, they like totally changed the feel of the game. One of the big things was like the hell of the melee is like lock on and you like lunge. It's not, if you're locked on, you melee, you like can't miss. Whereas like Halo 1, you could be standing right next to someone in melee and completely miss because you're not lined up properly. So, and some of the guns, just we were obviously, I mean, who wasn't a big fan of the M6D pistol? That was basically like
pistol in one, baby.
the all in one. Death from anywhere without a sniper rifle. We missed that in Halo 2, but we liked Halo 2, but just not as much as 1. And we were always hanging out at each other's houses, doing LAN parties like a couple times a week. Because basically my entire soccer team, we were all big fans of Halo. So I didn't actually even have my own Xbox until very late in the Xbox's life cycle. Because everywhere I went, everyone else had one, so I didn't really need one myself. But I got an Xbox 360. So it came out in November of 2005, and they were very hard to come by at that time. I was able to luckily get my hands on one in February of 2006, and been achievement hunting ever since. I was instantly hooked on it, and so I won't talk about the gamer score, because I will be mentioned later on when we get to milestones.
Oh. Foreshadowing.
But yeah, anyone who knows me, you'll hear my voice once a month, as I am also running the Vayner of Year the Vayner contest, since getting plugged in with these guys and getting plugged in specifically with the Vayner channel. I always liked Metroidvanias, but I didn't really take a strong liking to them until getting connected with you guys, and you know, now it's become my favorite genre.
It's awesome. I will take full credit, even though I know it's not even close to being me. It's probably Rocker and
Rocker in Fufu.
No, Kushmus. Definitely Kushmus.
Well, I know. I just they were the
Well, they're the same main person. Reason. Maybe that's what you're thinking of.
No, same, like I know Kush is big on Metroidvanias as well, but Rocker and Fufu were the ones that I think I talked to first when I joined the Discord.
Maybe. But Fufu doesn't play games, you forget. So
that is right.
You're thinking of someone else.
I think someone got a foof in just Metroidvania gamer score this last month. Not really, but there was quite a record set. That? So I'll leave that for my segment later.
Yeah, Vayners are the one genre mostly unscathed by the, you know, the 5,000 point games and that kind of stuff. There's a few easy ones.
Yeah, a few of the easy ones, but they haven't gotten lots of title updates.
No, nothing crazy. I mean, it's Historic Dude is probably the best Vayner, but that's neither here nor there. So you got into achievement hunting right away. Yeah, I remember back in those early days, it would just say achievement unlocked, and you wouldn't even know what you did.
Yeah, it would show the gamer score, but you didn't know what it was until you held the guide button, and it would take you to your achievement.
Not even.
See what the description was.
Not even. It just said achievement unlocked. That's it. That was the original.
Really?
And then eventually they had the gamer score, and then eventually they put what it was for.
I don't even remember that.
Yeah, that was back on the days of the Blades.
Did I have the Blades? The
good nostalgic Blades, yes.
I just must have forgotten that it only said achievement unlocked, and it didn't even say the gamer score or the achievement.
Nope. Not at first. It was kind of the way it says gamer picture unlocked now.
Yeah, it was just like that. I had forgotten about that.
So, did you find true achievements at an early stage, or xboxachievements.org, whatever that was called?
I think the first thing I was a part of was 360voice.com, and it would like read the achievements that you got, and it would write a little blog about you every day.
Yes, the old AI.
Yeah, and then I did use xbox360achievements.org, I think is what it was called. I think it now it's just xboxachievements.org, but I used that a little bit until I discovered True Achievements, and then I signed up for True Achievements as soon as I discovered it, which was April of 2009, so I'm just about coming up on my anniversary in about 2 weeks.
Nice.
Very cool. Very cool. All right, I'm sure I'll have more questions as we go, but we can dive right into the question of the week, which is also brought to us by Nerdy Neo, and I will have you ask the question.
Yeah, so, excellent. Thank you. So they asked me if I had any questions for the patrons this week, and I dove into my backlog of questions that I've used on my own show that I call Party Chat, and one that I asked a while back that I like is a really great question is, who or what is your favorite video game antagonist? So, the first answer I got here is from March Madness Barry, and it's common for antagonists to look for ways to increase their power, and through the use of betrayal, murder, and poisoning a town's water supply, Kefka from Final Fantasy VI actually succeeds. I remember playing this as a young kid and witnessing Kefka pretty much become a god and destroy the world and thinking this isn't how the story is supposed to be. The bad guy can't win. It's a game that turned the traditional narrative upside down and has stuck with me forever. I am not a Final Fantasy fan, so I don't know anything about that, but that sounds like a good choice because I know there are a lot of big Final Fantasy fans out there, as that is a gigantic franchise. Yeah.
Oh my goodness, we might have to kick you off now.
I am not a fan of JRPGs or turn-based combat, so Final Fantasy has never appealed to me.
You know, we've had questions in the past, but that's the game that would change your mind. if you played it. It's just so good. And Kefka was an amazing villain who you almost wanted to root for, but he was also a jerk at the same time, but he was very funny and very fun. So good answer, Barry. Barry.
I'm familiar with a lot of characters in Final Fantasy. Which can you describe Kefka, you know, Kefka for me?
He's like an evil clown is the best way I could describe him.
Okay.
He shows up all the time and just laughs at you and kills people and just, you know, just has a good time.
Oh, I just pulled it up and I don't think I've ever seen this character before.
And fun fact, the game just turned 30. Ooh. So the game just turned 30 years old, I believe, the Japanese release. So this is one that we pine for in the Final Fantasy Pixel Remasters to come to Xbox. Right, Wild West?
Yeah, no, I would definitely enjoy that. I'd pick it up full price, day one, pre-order, all of that.
See?
Okay. I know a lot of people say that 7 is their favorite. I haven't heard a whole lot of people talk about 6, though.
Yeah, that's because 7 was the first PlayStation game. So it was more polygonal and cutscenes and, you know, CD-based. But the old people like us, we liked 1 through 6.
Okay, cool. All right.
What else did Barry say?
Yeah, and Barry has another one as well. For AC Odyssey had a good antagonist because of the personal connection and because you would keep running into them from time to time. These games are so good, but I feel like it's kind of cheating, but also any of the Arkham games. The alien from Alien Isolation isn't much of a talker, but my goodness, do I go running in the opposite direction when I see it. I'm not big on scary games, so I will never play Alien Isolation. I did play it once for a Game Pass quest, and I just hid in the corner and hoped to God that the alien did not find me, and I did not have my heart ripped out or anything. So that's about the closest to that game I'm ever going to get.
Yeah, I mean, the Arkham games are good. You got Joker. You got Joker and everything, so they're good there. AC Odyssey, you know, you get to choose, like he says, you get to choose your, if you want to be a male or female, and then, you know, you have a, whoever you choose, the opposite person is the bad person, and so you kind of have a connection to them, like he says, so.
Did not know that.
The game's been out for a while, so, and it's not really a spoiler, because you don't know what's going on, and I will leave it vague on purpose, but. It was a good choice, and I like the newer games and the story they have. So it brought the story up in my opinion.
Cool. Yeah, I'm looking forward to getting to Odyssey at some point. I still have a couple more achievements left, but I have for the time being, I finished Syndicate last year, so I'll be doing Origins next, but it's kind of on the back burner. But I'm definitely looking forward to getting to Odyssey.
You're way behind.
Yeah, well, before the Year of the Assassin, which is basically the inspiration for me for the Year of the Vayner, I was way, way behind where I hadn't even played past Revelation. So I played everything past that up to Syndicate since. So I'm a lot more caught up than I was.
That's good. It's hard. It's hard now. Like, I was pretty well caught up when they took that break, and then they decided to make these long games, Origins and Odyssey and Valhalla. They're all these, you know, 150-hour games now, so it takes a long time to get through them.
Exactly. I think Origins is like 100 hours, Odyssey is like 150, and then Valhalla is like 200+. So, yeah. But yeah, the Arkham games are excellent. I just recently replayed Arkham City because I had not played it since it was new, when it first came out, and so it'd been like 10 years since I played it, and that was my favorite of them, so I replayed that recently, and that was great to refresh on that game, because yeah, that still excellent game and stands up. Although I was playing the Return to Arkham City version, and I don't know if it was like a glitch or something, but it seemed like none of the textures would load, so sometimes we'd be standing next to a wall and it looked like a texture from like an N64 game. So it kind of took me out of it a bit, because I've heard that there are some texture issues with that Return to Arkham, bundle, but didn't ruin the game. Just was like kind of something that stuck out like a sore thumb.
Yeah, that's the version I need to go back to. I did the Return to Arkham. That wasn't it a 2-pack, right?
Arkham Asylum and Arkham Origins, because the original ones are not backwards compatible.
Yeah, yeah. So I've done the old ones. I think I did the Arkham Asylum one from that. I just haven't done the City one because that's such a long game. And then you got all those maps you got to do with the different characters. And
yeah, I didn't do the challenges, but I played through the story and did everything that you doesn't require you to do a new game plus.
Yeah.
So, all right. So, Dio.
Yes.
I heard you talk about this on your podcast or
on my YouTube top 5 show, whatever episode?
You want to call it. Yes.
Okay. That's another show I've started recently.
It was the first one you did.
Okay.
I was going to ask you a question that I know the answer to, but I want you to talk about it here. How do you feel about 3D Vayners?
Oh, excellent question.
Speaking of Arkham, the Arkham games prompted this.
Yep, that is. So, thank you for mentioning that. So, another show that I recently started on my YouTube channel with a friend of mine is Top 5, where we rank our top 5 of whatever the topic is for that episode. We have a panel of people who are decently well-versed in whatever the topic is. And so, starting with the first episode, I had to do it, of course, of Top 5 Metroidvanias. And it was so popular that we did a part 2. But on part 1, Skeptical Mario joined me, and then on part 2, Rocker Dude and Icefire and J-Huns all joined me as well. But to answer your question, there is a criminal lack of 3D Metroidvanias. There's more than there were, of course, as time goes on, but I still think that there are far too few, and that the genre has grown quite a lot over the last few years. On that top 5 show, I was talking about how I feel that Shadow Complex was kind of like the reawakening of the genre, because up until that point, there weren't a whole lot of Metroidvanias, and since then, we've been getting a lot of them. But there still hasn't been a lot of 3D Metroidvanias, and even less of first-person Metroidvanias. So I would love to see more 3D Metroidvanias, and more so first person in the vein of the Metroid Prime games, because that was really what brought me into Metroidvanias. And other than the Metroid Prime games, like the only first person Vayners we have are the Superland games and Journey to the Savage Planet. So I would love to see more of those for sure.
Yes. I remember you saying you're a big Metroid Prime guy.
Yes.
And, Journey to the Savage Planet, I really would like to play. We also need more co-op Vayners.
That too, yes. More co-op,
definitely. And that fits the... Yes.
I'm all about co-op games. I don't like versus, but I do like co-op. So I have the Journey to the Savage Planet Employee of the Month edition, which is the Series X version. I have not played it yet, but I have played the original, and I did buy it after it left Game Pass. So I love that game. And if anyone ever needs a co-op partner to help with the old game minus, let me know and we can make it happen.
Old game minus. Sounds right up my alley. Sounds fun.
Yeah, there's a lot of great humor in that game. Obviously, it's a spoof on New Game Plus, but that was a free title update.
Okay.
So,
what else you got for us?
All right, so next up we have Chewy on Ice, who came in with a bunch of good answers. First off, being Vast does stand out as one of the best memorable antagonists in recent years. From Far Cry 3 was a great game in its own right, far superior than 2, but his presence really elevated it and I think helped give the series the legs it's had ever since. And he's not even the main villain in that game. He's a secondary antagonist to the usual vanilla goon we are used to. They learned from that and made the big bass, I think it meant big boss of their next games, much more interesting and outlandish. So I've also heard that, I think Far Cry 4 was Pagan Min, I believe, who was kind of in the vein of Vast, but didn't surpass it. So the only Far Cry game I've played is Blood Dragon, so I know that one doesn't really count. But I do have Far Cry 3, the Xbox One version, in my backlog, so I will be getting to that one at some point, because I've heard that one from a lot of people that that is the best in the Far Cry franchise.
Yeah, I remember going to... I don't even remember the store, but I remember going to the store, and like, I'm gonna, you know, I was like, okay, you know, I'm gonna go check out, see what they got available, you know, I'm gonna get a new game and everything. And just kind of on a whim, didn't really know much about Far Cry before, but, you know, I was looking at the box and it looked interesting, so I grabbed it and played it, and I loved Far Cry 3. Voss was great. I enjoyed it. Ended up getting 4 pretty early on. And yeah, in my mind, Pagan just didn't really get there as much as Voss did. And then 5 was good too in its own right, but I still think Voss was kind of the best so far. The pinnacle in it, and kind of helped, you know, get the series to where it is now, because I think it was kind of struggling after 2, which was, I've heard, was kind of a letdown. But
you know, I was just thinking, because I don't know the character's name, but the actor, Giancarlo Esposito, that was not 5, that was 6, right?
Yes, that was 6.
Okay, I don't even know who the antagonist of 5 was. That was the one that took place here United States, right?
Yeah, that was the preacher in set in like fictional Montana.
Yeah, I don't even know what that character's name is.
Montana's Seed. Real, dude.
Oh, I know it's real. I lived in it.
Oh.
It's a fictional town in Montana, I guess, is maybe the better way of saying it. I lived in Montana for 4 years. I know that's real.
Montana is a real place.
You know. I mean, I've seen it on a map. I don't know. I didn't know someone's actually been there until you just told me you were there.
I think it's the state, as a little trivia, side trivia, I think it's the state where the cows outnumber the people.
I would not be surprised by that. I think I've heard that before. That does sound familiar.
Yeah, there's like just under 1 million people total in Montana, but there's supposed to be more than 1 million cows is what this finding is, but who knows if that's real or not. But
I wonder how much that's changed since they last took the cow census.
I'm hungry for a burger.
That sounds good.
Okay, go ahead.
The next answer from Chewy was, people rave about Ezio as a great protagonist for Assassin's Creed, but I think it helps that he has some solid antagonists to fight in the Borgia family. A disgusting corrupt pope, his despicable incestuous children make for memorable villains that I don't think the series has been able to match since. The Ezio trilogy, that is a great set of 3 games, and I think often when people talk about the best of the Assassin's Creed franchise, you talk about Black Flag and arguably, you know, Assassin's Creed 2 or Brotherhood of Revelations, one of those. I mean, who doesn't like Ezio? He's a cool character, and it's great to get revenge on the family for killing your own family. Spoilers, but that's pretty early on in the trilogy.
Oh wow, there's death in that game.
Yeah. Wow. I wouldn't think there'd be a lot of death in an Assassin's Creed game, but
wow, don't tell me these things.
You know, you only had like what, 20 years almost now.
Yeah,
7.
I mean, I'm still on the first game, and the
first one was 2007.
That's true.
There's lots of death in that game.
Yeah, 2007 was the first Assassin's Creed.
Makes me laugh. Like, you get very upset when like someone close to you dies, but you just go through the streets killing hundreds and hundreds and hundreds.
Yeah,
of guards that are all in the same family.
That reminded me, I don't remember what game it was, but there was a game that I played that had one of the weirdest stats I've ever seen tracked in a game, and it wasn't for how many kills that you had, it's for how many children you had orphaned from killing people in the game.
That's interesting.
I have to look it up to find out what game that was, but
notice there's no children anywhere in the game.
Yeah, that's true. So,
you don't want to kill children.
And then Chewie's last answer, leaving it for last, because this was also my answer for when I asked this question on my show, is GLaDOS and Wheatley from Portals 1 and 2. They're brilliantly conceived antagonists using fantastic writing and humor to provide an insanely entertaining backdrop to the puzzle solving. Unhinged AI is always fun, and I feel like now more than ever, we're living in a world where real visions of AI offering us cake that we may or may not be real as a ploy to lead us to our deaths isn't all that far away. So, and on my debut segment to the podcast was One List, Two List, Bad List, Good List with, I think it was Elroy OMJ. My good list, I talked about Portal 2 just about a year ago, last February, I think it was.
That's right. So,
yeah, I love Portal.
Play it,
those games are amazing. Another, hey, we're talking about co-op a few minutes ago. Portal 2's got excellent co-op, and I'm happy to run through that with anyone if they ever need those co-op achievements. As I was looking through my friends list on TA, and I saw that there are a few people that have just one or two co-op achievements left. So if you want to wrap it up and get that completion of the game, let me know.
Ugh. Yeah, there was one difficult one that you had to go through without dying or something like that. Do you remember?
Yeah. So
I did that with someone many, many tries.
The co-op is broken up into five like chapters essentially. And each one has like 6 to 9 chambers in it. And the achievement, I'm just going off the top of my head since I haven't looked at it basically since last year, is for completing, I think it was a specific series of chambers. I think it was the last set. So it'd be like chapter 5 or whatever of co-op. I'm pretty sure you have to go through all of the test chambers in that little chapter without either you or your co-op partner dying. And it's not too bad if you know what you're doing, but it's easy to mess up and make a mistake. But I'm happy to help anyone who doesn't have that yet.
Wow. Yes, I know I've mentioned this before, but my mostly non-gaming wife went through the whole co-op with me in Portal 2, and it was awesome. And you could do that either local or online, and that's always
nice.
Welcomed.
Yeah, online.
Mm-hmm.
Any other ones that stand out to locally? You?
Yeah, Neo.
Well, I'll think about that because
won't steal my answers.
GLaDOS was my answer to the question and the inspiration for the question, because I think she's excellently written. The humor in both games is great. And, you know, the addition of Wheatley, he's hilarious, especially when he when there's a little bit of a plot twist about halfway through the game, and his character changes a bit, and it's funny seeing him adapt to the new settings that's going on, and how they wrote him at that point. And just, yeah, those games are great, and the writing is great, and it's, you know, probably GLaDOS is probably, like, the epitome of, like, a frenemy when it comes to video games. Antagonists. So, but yeah, I'll think about another one, see if I can come up with something.
All right. Wild West, your turn.
All right. First time, writer on the sheet here is Kush Moose. So welcome to the patron. You made it on the sheet for us, first time there. He says, I can't go into too much detail, but the antagonists in Star Wars Jedi Survivor are top tier. By the last act of the game, it was the equivalent of a book you can't put down until you finish. I kept playing for a few hours after getting all the chivos and rolling credits to hunt down all the in-game lore that helped explain their actions. I was looking forward to that announcement on Game Pass, and hopefully we'll get it soon that it is on there so I can roll into that universe again, and I'm looking forward to that. Fufu Cuddly Poof puts Handsome Jack is definitely up there for one of the best antagonists. He's the perfect asshat of a bad guy that you love to hate. The way he just rules and manipulates everything is great. The constant jabs and insults he throws at you, compounded with the entire Bloodwing fight when you finally are able to take out of its sweet, sweet revenge.
That when I asked this question on my show, I'm pretty sure that was one of my panelists' answers as well. That is a excellently written antagonist. Yeah. And not only just in Borderlands 2, but in Tales from the Borderlands, he was great too. He has like this Arkham Knight thing going on where in the Arkham franchise, Joker's showing up in your head all over the place, and in Tales from the Borderlands, Handsome Jack is like in your head. So that he was very well written in that game as well. So great answer. And then in regards to Jedi Survivor, I have not played it yet. Also in the backlog, I did play Fallen Order. But Jedi Survivor came out April 28th. And Fallen Order came out almost exactly, or not came out, but was added to Game Pass almost exactly a year after it released. So if Jedi Survivor follows a similar setting, it very well could be added to Game Pass via EA Play within the next month. So fingers crossed for that.
Hopefully middle of April we'll hear that good news and a lot more people will get to enjoy it. I liked Borderlands 2. I also liked Tansom Jack in there. And he was definitely annoying. He was douchey, all that stuff. And that's why you just, you know, it was great to, you know, he was a great bad guy because of that. And we won't ask Elb his opinion because we know about Borderlands. So, Fug says, Andrew Ryan, Bioshock, for spoiler reasons, I'll provide no reasoning, play the game.
Excellent answer.
Bioshock in general was just amazing game overall. But
yeah. I prefer Hungry Jack, just so you know.
Yeah.
Whenever I talk about games with best plot twists, it's always Bioshock and KOTOR. Yeah. Some of the best plot twists in a game I've ever seen.
Yeah. And I would say the antagonist of Bioshock, more than like a, you know, I kind of, X and I were kind of going back at the beginning of it about, you know, who or what for the antagonist. And I think the setting in Bioshock is kind of the big antagonist there, with just, you know, the dystopian underwater worlds. Everyone's trying to basically kill you, rip you to shreds, all that stuff. It's just, it was a great environment, great game. Can't wait for number 4 to come out whenever it does. And then for my answer, I was kind of looking through for my lists. One of the ones that I liked was the Flood in Halo. I just remember playing that through the first time, and you know, you're just like, oh, you got these little creatures coming at you, and then they just swarm you, and you're dead, you know, in 2 seconds. I thought that they were a good addition to the series, the franchise there. And then,
yeah, that level was almost like a genre shift in the game.
Yeah, it kind of went from a, you know, first person shooter, you know, sci-fi story to like a survivor horror type.
Yeah, was not thing, expecting so. That.
No. Some other ones, I enjoy the, as y'all know, I enjoy the Control and Alan Wake series, the Control one. They have the Hiss, and that, you know, it broke out and pretty much turned anyone and everyone into bad guys. So you never knew who was good or bad. If their protection was broken and they turned on you and everything, you go around the corner, they're right there. Same with kind of Alan Wake has something similar in that. You kind of have a doppelganger there, and it, you know, especially in Alan Wake 2, they really go lean into the horror aspect of it, and it was played very well. It was a nice genre shift from more of the action one in the first one. Those are a good series, but yeah, Bioshock was one that I had thought of. I really enjoyed, you know, everything to do with that, and Halo was another one that was right there as well. So but yeah, I mean, the easy answers are, you know, some of the ones I talk about a lot. Middle Earth, you got the orcs. I think they did a good job with the class structure there.
Oh, that's a good answer. Yeah, it's such a shame that the Nemesis system got trademarked or copyrighted or whatever, so the other people can't use it, because that had so much potential.
Yeah, it was really good. You killed one and then another one pops up, and then in the second game, I don't know if it was the first game, I played that a long time ago, but in the second game the person could come back from the dead, and so they could come back even stronger, and so it was made it even more difficult, and you know, where you have to really rely on finding their weaknesses and exploiting them and all that. So
yeah, in Shadow of War, I think it was in both of them, though, whenever they killed you, they would, like, rank up.
Yeah.
And yeah, the rock, paper, scissors that you had to do with their strengths and weaknesses in Shadow of War, the sequel, got kind of ridiculous.
Yeah, but it was still, like, yeah, I'm glad they kind of changed a lot of the in-game stuff that made it better. I didn't play it before then, but
Yeah, I didn't play it till after all the microtransaction fiasco was was removed. So I enjoyed Shadow of War. I liked Shadow of Mordor a little bit better, but they are both great games.
Yeah. But we probably should wake El from his nap since we were talking about Lord of the Rings and put some right to sleep.
Oh, what? Gollum? Gollum is your favorite game? What?
Game of the year, 2023. That and it was up there with Kong Skull Island. It was a tough battle.
Oh, boy. All righty then. A couple more answers to go. We have X the Hero, who says, my answer goes to Arthas Menethil. He starts off as a good guy paladin in Warcraft 3. And Kush is in here, so I can't tell him that's 3 Roman numeral I's. And as you play that game, he becomes more and more desperate to win, so much so that he makes some questionable choices and becomes bad, very bad, from paladin fighting the undead to undead death knight after taking up the Lich King's sword. I'll spare the plot points, but he eventually fuses with the Lich King's soul to become the new Lich King in charge of all the undead. But there's still this tiny shred of humanity inside him, so even though he's the ultimate evil, he's able to keep the undead legion mostly in check and keep them from doing any more harm than they've already done. This is where the World of Warcraft expansion Wrath of the Lich King picks up. Wow, thank you for that wild synopsis. Oh wait, there's more. He's memorable because, yes, he's bad and does terrible things, but he justifies everything in a way that makes you, as the player, want to agree with him. And then as Lich King, despite being corrupted by power and super evil, you kind of feel bad for him because you know that he's doing everything he can with his remaining shred of humanity to atone, but the power of the Lich King is just too strong. When you finally defeat him, it's not some noble victory, but a scary realization because you just killed the guy who was holding the undead back from invading the mainland. Wow. Well, thank God I don't have to play Warcraft ever and pour 5,000 hours into World of Warcraft, so thank you for that, X. That does sound like a cool villain, though.
Yeah, I don't know much about World of Warcraft. I haven't really played any of that franchise, but that it does sound like a very interesting villain arc. So, man, good answer.
It is a good answer. Ooh. I do have an L confession. When I was young, and this actually is a Final Fantasy correlation, in Final Fantasy IV, which was our number 2, back in ye old 1991, the main character was a paladin, but I had never heard that word before, so I pronounced it, of course, paladin, because it must be just like Aladdin, right? So there's my L confession. I eventually figured out it was a paladin. You know, back in the days before voice acting, we had to read.
I had a similar word association thing where I'd only ever seen it spelled and never heard it pronounced. And mm-hmm. that was a lot more recently than that was Mass Effect Andromeda and the robots. What the heck were they called? I forget what that faction is called. The Reapers. But anyways, no Reapers in Mass Effect Andromeda.
Oh, sorry. I didn't hear the Andromeda smart. That was my fault.
Yeah, I forget what the robots were called in Andromeda. But anyways, like one of the most powerful one is a progenitor. And I had never actually heard that word pronounced. So I called it progenitor until I was playing with someone online who said progenitor. And I was saying progenitor. And they're like, what the heck is progenitor? It's like, oh, I feel like an idiot now.
No, I could see it.
So
I could see why you said that.
Like the remnant? Is that what you're talking about? Or the ket?
The remnant. Yeah, that's right. Remnant.
Oh, okay.
One of the probably the heaviest remnant units called a progenitor, but I thought it was called progenitor until I played online and someone said it. I'm like, oh. So that's my Neo confession. I did think of another antagonist, which is also a protagonist of a game, if you want to call it that, but Carrion. You play as the bad guy, and that was a fun little small Metroidvania. So I'll throw my hat in the ring for that one as well.
Oh. It was fun eating the scientists, I have to say.
Yes.
And then, the graphics were a little too pixely, but I know you love that. But So yeah, I learned a lot about you from your show. It's good.
Yeah.
But that was a fun one. And last but not least, E.L. Sock. I'm a fan of... Oh, sorry. It's in the game. I'm a fan of...
Didn't we determine it's L. Sock last week?
He's not on the show, so L can just say what he wants to say.
I told him to his face he's never going to change, and he was fine with it, so...
All right.
It did happen. You can go check the...
check the tapes.
The minutes. Check the minutes.
Well, no tape, but you can check the minutes.
Check the tape. I am a fan of an antagonist that has you tricked in the beginning, like they're a good guy, but then the old switcheroo, and now number one most hated. More spoilers. Frank Fontaine from Bioshock is a prime example of that. Would you kindly? So yes, I guess Bioshock seems to be on a lot of these lists. And those were good ones. I thought of a Vayner one too.
Oh.
And I'm sure you could probably figure it out. Good old Flame Face from Guacamelee.
Oh. I should have figured that was gonna be your answer.
How fun was he? He would just show from time to time, insult you. Kidnap people, all kinds of fun stuff. And I think then
in the first game, yeah, I used his skin through basically my whole playthrough.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because each of the skins has a different ability, and I liked his ability best. So I think I played the entire game with that. With his, I want to say his ability had something to do with regenerating your health, and that's why I went with that one. But your
stamina regenerates slowly. See, I'm on it actually.
No.
He was in the Frenemies DLC.
Yes.
So I think the real bad guy was, Calica?
Yes.
Yeah. And, but he, I don't know, I just remember Flame Face. And then in 2, he hangs out with you, I think. It's been a while. The Guacamelee came out 10 years ago. Holy cow.
My goodness.
Right?
Although I didn't play them until just a couple years ago, so it doesn't seem that long for me.
Yeah. I'm sure you heard about them.
Yes.
From me and Koosh. We love them the mostest. I was thinking of some mainline games that I played. Gears, of course, always comes to mind. The General Romp fight is one of my favorites. I don't know if he's a great antagonist throughout the entire game, though. But I thought of him almost immediately. Because I love that first final boss fight.
Yeah, I remember playing that on Sanity for the first time. And that fight was a real pain. But apparently there's like
the glitch.
Yeah, the Krill. Apparently there's like a glitch in the game that if you take cover behind a certain rock or, you know, cover, he won't ever actually come after you. So you can just stay there and shoot him.
So, yeah, I think I did that on accident. Fun. I think I did that on accident. Yeah.
I did not. Although I probably would have if I had known about it, because he was really, really frustrating after playing him for like an hour and a half. It's
frustrating. You get the torque bow. Yeah. You got to play that co-op. It's much better.
I do still need to do Gears 3 co-op with 4 people. So,
wow. So good, so good. All right, well, thank you for the question. Nobody has anything else to include.
No, I think
we can proceed.
That was a good question. Thank you.
Yeah, got a whole slew of them. So if you ever, I can't think of anything, ask me. I got your back.
All right, we got you. In our little... All right. Speaking of stores that I can afford to shop at, it is time for the April targets. March has come and gone.
See what you did there.
Or as we call it, April targets.
That will come into play with one of the actual targets of this month as well.
All right. We shall see. First one is called Use a Guide! Exclamation point, and that is for earning missable achievements. You need 2 for bronze, 4 for silver, and 6 for gold. That one shouldn't be too bad. I would think most games have missables these days. And most people on TA are using a guide, so that should be easy. Connoisseur. Play games with ratings of 4 stars or more. You got bronze 1, silver 2, gold 3. That's also should be easy, but people play a lot of nonsense to get gamer score. On Sunday, I played Goat Simulator 3 with Rocker and Majork, and we were surprised to find out that that game had a rating of 4 stars or more.
Hmm. Well, that's surprising. I would not have guessed that.
Us either, but you know what? It counted. And It's a Target is for earning achievements that start and end with the same letter, just like the word target. Not sure what makes this an April thing, but here we have it. Bronze 2 achievements, silver 4 achievements, and gold 6 achievements. Those might be the hardest to get naturally, although I saw, like, in, for example, Butterfly. The achievements are called level 1, level 2, level 3. The numbers get dropped off, and just the word level counts, and those count. So there are some easy ones to be found.
Yeah, I was going to say, I was looking through my available, because I was trying to figure out which achievements I could go for that target, and I'm not going to go for it. But I was like, why is this achievement that ends in a punctuation mark counting? So, yeah, punctuation numbers do not count. It is only the letters. So, FYI.
But you need to go for it. That's law now. 6 achievements. Not that much.
It's in the fine print when Elle asked you to be on the show.
It's in... Yeah, like if you're going to be on the show, you need to be held to a certain standard. And that standard is getting 6 whole achievements with start and end with the same letter. Okay. Yeah. All right. How about go for the bronze? All right. Go for the bronze.
If I can't get gold, I don't go for the target.
Come on. You seem like the type of guy that would have a gold medal bronzed anyway. So you should go for it. Like, That's your style.
That's all or nothing.
All or nothing? All right, fine.
If I had more to choose from, I probably would, but because I'm working on recovering my dive before I start a ton of new games, so I don't have a lot of options.
Well, you could always click on when you're on the target, you can click on available achievements, and then there's a little thing you can click for games that are that you might have in your collection that haven't started yet, and those show up too. So that's always nice if you're someone that keeps all their backlog in there, even if you haven't started them. All right. That brings us to Games Showcase. I'm sure you've all been waiting with bated breath to find out if I completed MLB The Show 23, and I did.
Oh, nice.
With 2 days to spare.
Oh, I thought you were going to say like 2 hours.
wasn't that bad. I was harassing Wild West for days and days. I was very worried.
Messaging me at 4 in the morning. I can't do this.
He's like, I'm in the bathtub. I'm going to get electrocuted. Go away. And the final achievement was for getting 5 stars in the March to October, which a lot of people had trouble with. But one good thing about waiting as long as I did is I had a lot of information out there and a lot of people to get their experiences drawn from. So I know Mike Pitch had messed up and he had to do the March to October over. And what that basically was is like a 6 hours, March through October, and they basically give you moments of the game. They'll start you off in the 6th or 7th inning, and then you basically win. On beginner mode, it's so easy. You have to try hard to not get a hit and not get 1,000 runs. And when you're pitching, you go right down the middle and they miss. Very easy on beginner, so it wasn't really a challenge. but the five-star off-season was the hard one. And then there was a trick to go offline and then sign some players. And then if you don't get five stars, you would just delete the local save and set you scum. Luckily, I got five stars on my first try. But, you know, you sign Otani, you sign a bunch of stars, and they like you, and they really, really like you, and you get five stars. So I added MLB The Show 24 to my game collection for hoping it would show up on RTDL, and alas, it did not. I also tricked Michelle into adding it to her game collection because I said, yeah, you know what? 24 is only supposed to be, you know, 4 or 5 hour completion. And I said, even Wild West did it, so it can't be that bad.
Oh, okay.
So, and sure enough, it showed up on her list. So,
irony.
I guess I'm going to have to start it and work on some multiplayer. I'm going to show her the ropes. She's never played one before. She was at my house watching me play some, and she couldn't believe like how like accurate like the player stances, the player models, all that stuff, the way the stadiums look. So ready for 24.
Oh yeah, MLB The Show 23 is a 35 to 40 hour completion, and MLB The Show 24 is a 6 to 8 hour.
Yeah, I want to say you said it took you a lot less than that, right?
Yeah, I clocked in about 28 according to TA, so I didn't follow.
In 24, sorry.
Yeah, mine was about 5 hours, and I did it like the day of it came out, so I didn't have a lot of guides or anything, but I was just going off descriptions, and I'm sure you could probably do it in about 4 hours now, easily.
Wow. I mean, 6 days, not bad.
Yeah.
You only have 12 months to do it?
Yeah.
No worries.
Just do one hour per month. You'll get it done here soon.
Go wrong.
The less time playing a baseball game, the better.
Hey. Wow, you're really ruffling my feathers.
Yeah.
Next thing you're gonna tell me you don't like sandwiches. Now we're gonna be tussling.
Nope. I do like sandwiches, so we'll have that, but yeah. Right. I'm just not a fan of sports games.
You can stick around for now.
It's like, did I just uninvite myself?
No, it's okay. It's okay. Well, Wild West, I'm going to let you decide if you want to go first or let Neo go first to his insubordination.
Well, we let Neo go first. We'll let the guest go.
All right.
All right, so I'll probably talk about two things a little bit rather than one thing at length, and one of that is because it got mentioned at length last week, and I have also been playing through Immortals Fenyx Rising over the month of March, and I finished up the base game about a week ago, maybe a little bit longer than that, because I put it on hold in order to complete another game, which was my BCMX game of the month for March. And then after I completed that, I came back to Immortals. So I'll continue talking about Immortals first before I go back to that other game. And so I am working on the first DLC right now, which is A New God, which picks up basically right as the story of the base game leaves off, where for anyone who hadn't played Immortals Fenyx Rising, I say that, you know, for a Ubisoft game, I think that they went in a great direction. It's kind of sad that it didn't hit it off so well and there won't be a sequel, because I really enjoyed what I have played of it so far. I know it's not, I consider it recent, even though I think it came out in like 2020. But that and another thing that they just recently came out with that went in a different direction than they usually do is the Prince of Persia Lost Crown, which I've heard nothing but good things from everyone who's played it. So it's kind of cool to see Ubisoft go in directions that they're not used to, even if they don't make, you know, huge money on it. But I have greatly enjoyed my time in it. And the first DLC, as I said, picks up right where the game left off, where you defeat Typhon. And that's the main bad guy of the game. And you've spent the game helping four of the gods of Olympus. The main four that you help through the game is Ares, Aphrodite, Athena, and Hephaestus. and they help you in the final battle against Typhon. And then after the game ends, you are basically working your way to prove yourself as a god, to join them as one of the gods on the Mount Olympus. And so the entirety of the DLC is basically the vaults that you play throughout the game, which are kind of like the shrines, if anyone has played. I know, blasphemy, I'm talking not Xbox for just a second, but the Breath of the Wild or Tears of the Kingdom, how that went in a different direction for the Zelda games. And instead of having temples, they have shrines all over the place. Immortals Fenyx Rising does a very similar thing, where there's vaults all scattered across the landscape, and you have to go and solve them. They give you various things. Namely, at the end, you get Zeus's lightning, which helps you increase your stamina. But the entirety of the New God DLC is basically those vaults, but kind of turned up to 11. So the vaults in the base game are usually not very long. They take maybe about 15, 20 minutes a piece on the longer end. Some of them are shorter than that. The vaults or challenges that you are playing through in the New Gods DLC are typically 20 minutes or longer. And there's probably like 20 of them or so. And you have to gain the blessing of those four gods that I mentioned a moment ago. And in order to gain the blessing of each of them, they each have probably about six or so vaults or challenges that you have to complete. And it gives you new abilities that you didn't have in the base game. Unfortunately, those don't backtrack to the base game if you were to go back to them. They are only in the DLC. But the entirety of the DLC takes place basically in this majestic heavenly realm above the clouds. So it's very pretty. And you're solving these big, more lengthy vaults, so to speak. And each one of them also has a chest hidden within them somewhere. And you don't have to collect those hidden chests if you're just going to beat the story of the DLC. But if you want to get 100% in the DLC, you do need to collect all of those hidden chests, because there is one final vault at the end that you unlock by getting all, I think, 24 of those chests. And some of them are, the puzzles are much more difficult than they were in the base game. I was just talking to someone in Discord the other day, where I actually had to look up a guide for a few of them to figure out how to unlock them. So typically they're not difficult to find if you're looking for them. It is nice how the chests in each one of those, just like the base game, have a large beacon of light coming out of them, so you can kind of get an idea of where they are. But some of them are a bit more difficult than the base game to figure out how to unlock, so I did have to look up some guides for those. But I do recommend that if you are going through them, get those chests on your first time through those challenges. As I said, some of them can be rather lengthy. Sometimes that chest will be right at the beginning, sometimes it'll be at the very end. But if you complete the vault, you can go back into it at a later time, but you do have to solve all the puzzles again. So if you miss the chest, it's right at the end. You got to basically go through the whole vault again. And I am very, very close to completing that DLC. I was playing it just before we started recording, and I got the second to last achievement in the DLC. I think I have one left, and that is, yeah, I have one left achievement left in the DLC, and that is for completing. So I've earned the favor or the blessing of all those gods that I helped, and now I have to prove myself to Zeus himself. So there's one final challenge, which I will be doing after we are done tonight. But the challenge that I mentioned, that you have to get all four of those 24 chests, is kind of like this big challenge where you start out in the middle, and it's almost like a clock layout where there's all these different branches sticking out from where your starting point, and you have to go around and solve all these. It's not, because through the vaults that you go through from the game, it's usually going from point A to point B. This one's laid out a little different, where you have, oh, it's like a wheel and spokes sort of thing. So each one of those spokes has a different puzzle, and there's like 10 of them, I think, or maybe there's 12. And for some reason, I ran into a glitch on this one on the last spoke. So I actually had to start the entire thing over again, but fortunately I'd already solved it, so it didn't take very long. But one of them is you have to move a ball into a slot, which you do a lot of the times in the game. But also what happens through the, I think I've probably played close to 70 hours of the game, 80 hours of the game so far. And anytime you drop something off the side of a ledge, and it'll respawn for you. But for some reason, this is the only time it didn't. I dropped the ball off the ledge because I thought that was part of the puzzle. I needed it to respawn, and it did not respawn on me. So when you're, if anyone's working on this new God DLC and you're on the secret challenge, don't drop the ball off the ledge because it does not respawn. You have to start all over again. So there are two other DLCs, which is the, which I'll be starting as soon as I finish this one up. The second one is Myths of the Eastern Realm. And I've heard pretty good things about that one. And then the last one is The Lost Gods, which I think is like a genre change from what you played throughout the rest of the game. And I've heard from people who've played it said that it's a little bit in dip of quality compared to the other ones. But yeah, looking at the DLCs, the first one, I actually can't see the rating on this one. Oh, it's 2.0. The one I'm working on right now is a 2.5 rating. The one I'm about to start, Myths of the Eastern Realm, is a 3.5 rating. And then The Lost Gods, the last one, goes down to a 2.4. So I don't know much about those ones yet, but I've heard that that second one is good and that third one is not as good.
And there was a discussion in the podcast discussion room or channel about the DLCs. And yeah, it seems like one of them, one of these things is not like the other type of a thing.
Yeah, it was like one is good, one is average, and one is bad. It's always what I've kind of heard.
From what I remember hearing when the game was, when these DLCs were first coming out, I think the third one is almost more like a top-down twin-stick shooter, but I could be wrong about that. I'm just going off of what I thought I heard, you know, a couple years ago when this DLC came out, which I like twin-stick shooters, so I'm, if that is accurate, I might really like it, but that is not how the game has played so far. So from what I've heard, it's definitely a change, in it's a genre shift from what we've been playing so far. Yeah. So, and then the other thing that I was playing, I took, so after I beat the base game of Immortals, I took, I put that on pause so that I could finish off my random game for the month for BCMX. And it also counted towards the March targets. And that was Sherlock Holmes Crime and Punishment, which is basically a point and click mystery, you know, solving walking sim, really, because you're not really doing a whole lot. It's a Sherlock Holmes game. And I actually had dived it 2019, so basically 4 years ago, and then, or 5 years ago now. And I played, so the game consists of six chapters. Each one of those is a different case for Sherlock to solve. And I had played through the first two, because I had dived the game way back, and then I had played it off and on over the course of the last 5 years here and there for different challenges. But I had not touched the game in probably 3 years. So I was coming into it almost completely cold, not knowing what was going on. And I was at the beginning of case three, and I was following the walkthrough. And even with the walkthrough, I'm like, I don't know what's going on. It's telling me to do these things, and I don't know how to do them. So it took me a little while to get back into the swing of things and figure out what was going on. The main thing was that as you discover clues, you hit Y to go into your clues, and you have to link clues together to get like nodes on this map. And you can, you have to link the nodes on the map to come to conclusions on who done it. And that was the part that, the main part that I had forgot since I hadn't played it in years. But once I figured that out, I'm like, oh, okay. So now I know what I'm doing. So, the cases, you know, at first I was not digging it because it's a pretty slow paced game, as you can imagine. But once I got past like the first, or technically it was the third case, the first one I played after getting back into the game, that one was a bit slow because I was still getting my bearings again. But for the fourth, fifth, and sixth cases, I actually enjoyed them. The fifth and sixth case, I was actually trying to, rather than just following the guide going here and here and here, I was trying to figure out, okay, what should I be doing next before I looked at the guide to tell me if that was right or not. But there is a great guide for following it, and it looks like, I didn't think that so many people would have played it, but it was Games with Gold, which is how I ended up with it, and I was looking at my friends list, and it's a large chunk of you have played it. So I think, let's see here, about 36 out of the 45 people my friends list have completed it. So probably a good chunk of you have already played it and know about it. It was a interesting chain. The, I don't know if you can call it a plot twist, but I did have to go back and play a little bit of the first case again in order to get the last achievement, which is for interacting with your dog Toby in each of the six cases, because I had missed it. So I went back and went through the intro of the first one, and there were some things that I noticed in the later cases that these things seem to be completely disconnected from each other. But going back to the first chapter, I was like, oh, okay, so there is threads kind of weaved through all of the different cases that kind of all tie together. Because at the very end of the game, there was like this new faction that just appeared to show up out of nowhere. And it was just because I'd completely forgotten about the first case since it had been 5 years since I played it. But the direction that it took at the end of the game was, I was like, oh my gosh, this is basically the exact same plot as Fight Club, but in the 1800s or early 1900s, whenever the game takes place. So I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. But yeah, so that was Sherlock Holmes Crimes and Punishment. You are, you know, you're Sherlock, so you should know what to expect. You're looking for clues to solve. Were they all murders? Yeah.
You are Sherlock in that game. I'm surprised. Is there Watson in the game?
Yes, Watson is following you around, and you actually have to use him in a couple of cases to solve some puzzles. But other than that, he doesn't really do anything other than he's there for moral support to talk to. But yes, he is in the game as well. And
moral support.
Yeah, I'm trying to...
You can do it, Sherlock, laddie.
I'm trying to think of... No. Case two, I literally remember nothing about case two, so I can't say for certain if all the cases were about a murder, but I do know that cases 1, 3, 4, 5, and 6 were all about a murder, so I'm assuming case two was about a murder as well. But it was getting towards the end of the game, I was like, hey, I'm kind of getting the swing of these things, and I think I'm now thinking like Sherlock. So I thought they were well written, and I was thinking about, like, if you were to write this, like, how do people come up with some of these things? Like, because they want to lead you to these like false conclusions to try to trick you, to make you think, oh, this is obviously the person who did it, but they're like, you know, nope, that person was framed or they were helped by someone else. And so it's like, thinking about the people like writing it, it's like, that would be tough. That's not something I could ever do. So I applaud them for coming up with all these plot twists and stuff, because, you know, stories like that are, I find, enthralling. Like, one of my favorite movies is The Prestige, where that's some of the greatest plot twists ever. And it's like, I could never, ever come up with something so like convoluted and still make sense. So touche to people that write those type of plot twist stories.
Wow. Overall, the achievements weren't so bad.
Yeah, the achievements were pretty good. The most difficult part about the game was I was typically playing it late at night and I was falling asleep. So the hardest thing was staying awake.
Yeah,
just because I was tired.
Wow, what a...
It's not a very action-packed game, as you can imagine. It's a detective case, case-solving game. So not a lot of minute-to-minute action to keep your blood pumping. No missables, and the guide did a really good job. So if there are anyone out there who hasn't played it yet, yeah, you can follow that guide and it does a great job. And you just did. The one missable is that one that I mentioned about interacting with Toby, right, the dog, in each case, but it's not actually missable because you can go back and replay cases, and he's usually right at the beginning of the case. But if you don't want to have to do that, just make sure you interact with him at least once in each of the cases. But yes, I played the Xbox One version, which has since been removed from the Microsoft Store because I think it was republished under another publisher or something like that, because there's a couple different versions of the game.
Yeah, I remember they had some issues with Frogwares, reading about it and everything, and rights issues and all that. So. But it was a good game. I gave it a 4 out of 5. I liked it. I thought it was good.
So I've also dived the sequel, which is The Devil's Daughter, but I have not done anything other than the first achievement. So, and who knows when I'll get to that one.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned the missable, because for games like this, it's, you want to figure it out yourself. You don't want to just stick your face in a guide. Otherwise, it's, what's the point? But if there's missables, then you feel inclined to, and I don't blame anyone that would. So it's always good to know about that stuff going in, for the, sure.
I don't know if it counts as a missable, but there was in, I think it was in case five, the walkthrough says at this point, you have to do a couple of things in a very specific order. Otherwise, you'll lock yourself out of, I think, one of the achievements at the end of the game, because I just followed it. So if you do play it, I would recommend going and looking at the guide for case five, because you have to do something in a very specific order. Otherwise, you might have to play through at least that case again, if not the entire game. But I don't believe you have to play through the entire game. I think you just have to redo that case.
Alrighty. That was Sherlock Holmes' Crimes and Punishments from Mr. Neo. Now it's time for Wild West to talk about his game.
All right. So since Kush isn't here, I decided to take the cozy genre and the Game Pass genre, mash it into one. And what do you get? You get Lightyear Frontier, the brand new simulation management game that's on Game Pass. I know when you hear those words, you think it's these 50 to 100-hour slogs. This one is not that. This one came out, I believe, about 2 weeks ago on Game Pass. It's already pegged a completion time of 8 to 10 hours. So if there's ever a contest that needs a management one and you don't want one that's going to be a huge sore on your tag or something like that, or a big-time investment, this is the one for you. I started this game today. I played it for about 2.5 hours, and I really like it. It reminds me a lot of Farm Together. It's a little different. It's not, it's a little bit easier, I believe, on keeping track of all the different materials you have so far. I'm only, like I said, I'm only about 2.5 hours into the game. But I think it'll be a little bit easier on the management side. It's not very heavy like Farm Together is, where it's just, you know, you got a lot of different crops that you're doing, or trees or other different items. This one's pretty streamlined, I think. To start it off, this is a game preview, so they are constantly updating stuff. The reason why I was able to start it now, and for me, was that the game has came out very well put together so far. There's not anything broken too much that I've seen. A lot of times I'll read about these games that are in game preview and they come out and they have to fix a bunch of stuff right at the beginning. And so that's why I usually like to wait and wait till they fix up most of the stuff before starting it. This one came out really well made so far. It has kind of the cartoony graphics. They're not realistic at all. You crash land on a planet. So it's kind of got a sci-fi setting. And your first objective is to find your mech. So the mech is something that you get into kind of like a cartoon Titanfall style. You get into the mech and then it gives you with some objectives. And you need to find some tools that you can attach to the mech to be able to start harvesting the trees, the plants, and the different alien fungi and, you know, all that different stuff that's on the planet. So once you get all the tools and everything, then you can start collecting resources and build a tent kind of as your home base. You can put it wherever you want and you just start going from there. You can get resources by chopping trees down. There's different plant life that you can suck up and get seeds, and then you plant them in a box. You'll get the trees will give you wood. The plants will give you you know, their resource. And so you'll get all these different resources throughout the game. And then you can build stuff with it. And then the game uses a morning, afternoon, and evening cycle. In the evening, I have not ever tried just playing straight through it yet. I've always gone back to my tent at the end of the night and slept and started the next day. If you do that, you usually, in the first area that I'm at, is just a typical grasslands area. And I noticed that as I fed the wildlife, it gave me a little bit of bonus in the area that I was at, that the resources came back more plentiful if I fed the wildlife in the previous day. And so the area I'm at, the max that you can do that is 3 different animal nests that are around. You can, using the resources you have, you can kind of combine them and create this food for the creatures around. And you can go to their nests and you feed them. You sleep at the end of the day when you're done doing all your stuff, and you sleep the next day. It shows you the bonus on the screen. It says, you know, because you slept and because you fed, you know, 3 nests, you get, you know, a lot more resources around the map that have come back. So, and it, I have noticed it. Some days I don't do it, and I've noticed that some of the stuff that's around the planet in my area, at least, has not grown back as much if I haven't done it. So that's something that you can look forward to if you're doing it. So there's so far, there's some metals that are around in the rocks. There's at the further out you go, you'll get more rare metals or other items that you don't see very close to the base, that at least that I set up. The one negative that I would say so far is I feel like and I hope they change it as they continue to update it and improve it. There seems to be a lack of direction as you're trying to do the next objective. I felt like the objectives only kind of came out when you picked up a new resource and it says, oh, hey, you picked up aluminum. So now that you picked up aluminum and you discovered it, now you can create all of these things. And then the objective would come up after it and saying, okay, we'll build this thing. And so it wouldn't say, hey, go find some aluminum so you can build this thing. You had to kind of discover it first. And I think a little bit more direction so you can streamline players, especially because this is more of a casual game and not like a you know, city building or where you have a lot of different parts and farm together. This is, at least right now, is very streamlined. I think it would be well with more objectives like that. But overall, I've enjoyed my time with it. My wife has even expressed interest in possibly playing it too, as she was watching me play it. So she likes more of the casual stuff as well. And I was kind of talking her through it and everything. And, you know, it's not very heavily invested in, you know, difficult mechanics so far. And I enjoy it. I'm going to start, you know, I'll continue to play more in it and explore different areas. I know there's some achievements for purifying different areas. And so they'll have some kind of like little, it's Nox jelly or something like that, that you can spray with some water and clean it up. And if you do that enough in a certain area, you'll purify that area. And I think you have to do that a few times to get an achievement for that. Speaking of achievements, there's achievement tracking, and so far everything's tracked beautifully.
Ooh.
So some of the achievements on it are for like planting your first plant, and that popped right away. Some of the other ones that are on there are like plant 100 seeds, plant 500 seeds, plant 1,000 seeds. Those have been going up every time I plant a seed, it goes up. So, you know, so far the tracking has been on point, which is great considering that, again, this is a game preview game. So, I really enjoy it. I think for anybody that just wants kind of a casual management game, simulation game, I think this will definitely scratch that itch. It's a great game for Game Pass. You can kind of try it out. It's, like I said, it's a 8 to 12 hour completion somewhere in there from what I'm seeing. So it's not long. I don't know if they'll add achievements later on that might make it more difficult. I hope not, but for those people that just like that casual experience, this will be something that's a lot of fun.
So I was surprised after watching this trailer that it's first person.
So you can,
because you say it's like farm together,
you can do both. I expect that's completely different. Oh. You can do both. So there's a button that you can change the view on. I changed mine to third person so I could see the mech kind of like in Farm Together, where you see. I haven't done that for the person. Too. Yeah. So.
The aesthetic reminded me of, have you ever played Island Saver?
I haven't. No, I know the game, but I have not played it.
Yeah, so in Island Saver, you're recycling and cleaning up garbage and stuff like that. In this game, you're farming.
Yep.
So yeah, it's the same thing, of course.
Yeah, it's a really good. I think that a lot of casual people will like it, or if you want to try to, you know, do something with your kids, or, you know, if you have someone that kind of likes the genre that just wants something that's, you know, not very time consuming, not very, you know, where you have to manage a bunch of different things. I think it's going to be very, very easy to do and very fun. So definitely a good game to try on Game Pass.
Cool. Yeah, I played the demo a few weeks ago and I liked what I played with it. So I'm definitely looking forward to playing it at some point.
Oh, right. So you're into management a little bit, Neo?
I wasn't, but I got going off of the Xbox reservation for a moment, I got a like I said, back in high school, during the time of the original Xbox and like GameCube, I built a PC back then, and I was a PC gamer primarily until like I said, I played a lot of original Xbox, just basically just Halo 1 over at friends' houses. It wasn't until late in the cycle that I got my own Xbox. And then when 360 came out with achievements, I've basically been hardcore Xbox ever since. And so I never kept my computer up until last September. I got a new computer that can actually run PC games, and I got into Satisfactory, and is also a management game where you just build stuff and build cool factories. So I've played about 120 hours of that, and I love that game. So now when things say they have the management tag on them, I'm like, maybe I will look into this a little bit more rather than just immediately writing it off.
Sam, you wrote off Final Fantasy earlier.
Yes, wow. Kind of like that.
Okay, just making sure. We wouldn't want any hypocriticals on the show other than me. Alrighty, boys. What else can we talk about? Oh, I don't know. Sales. Totally the best sale gig I've ever done in my entire life.
We were hanging on every word.
Every word. Well, I will bury a minor lead with some Game Pass news. And I will go ahead and tell everyone that Back 4 Blood Ultimate Edition, which it doesn't say in the TA list, but if you click in, it's Back 4 Blood that comes with all the DLC, and it normally retails for $90, but it is $10. Mm-hmm. And it is leaving Game Pass, so for $10 you get the entire game and all the DLCs. The season pass alone is usually like $20. So
it's leaving Game Pass.
This would be the bargain of the week. Yes, I'm burying the lead a little bit.
Oh.
We're going to talk about that a little later, but we're in sales.
I did not notice that.
Yeah. And my group stopped playing it because it was really difficult, but now it's back at the stream of consciousness, so we'll probably get back to it at some point soon.
Didn't they make it a little bit easier? I saw it's not as difficult, or.
Well, if anybody knows about that, that would be wonderful.
The completion time is still 170 to 226 hours, so quite a time sink.
Yeah,
that doesn't include.
It's really
the DLC.
Just for difficult. It's. I think it's more of a difficulty thing.
Is it okay?
I don't know if there's any. I don't know if there's any major grinds.
Well, they did add. I think
7, 8, and 11 ratio achievements. So.
Yeah, they did add some difficulty achievements after the fact in the DLC or title update, whatever it was, that was like a harder difficulty to beat it.
Yes, well, We beat it on the easiest difficulty, and that took a while. I think we just don't like our cards. Well, Prue and I don't like the cards aspect, and Michelle and Fufu do like the card aspect, so... Well, actually, it's a $99.99 version initially. So for $10, if you like Left 4 Dead and those type of games, it's definitely, definitely similar.
And you're not close to getting that completion, and you want it. Now is definitely time to pick it up.
Yeah, I have no dreams of getting the completion, but I'm happy to get a little bit more done towards it. Now, what are you thinking this week, Wild West?
All right, I've got a few ones as well. Children of Morta was once on Game Pass. Now it is not on Game Pass anymore, but they have its special edition that has kind of all of the extra heroes and content and everything. It is $8.09, down from $26.99. I've heard good things about this game. It was one of the ones when it was on the leaving Game Pass, I kind of briefly thought about doing it, and I thought about doing it when it was on Game Pass, and I just never got around to it. So I'm going to probably pick this one up and might do this one in the future. I would be remiss, because I know that Koosh would probably talk about A Juggler's Tale, $3.59, down from $17.99. So one that is, I believe that's well-liked. And then another one is Dreamfall Chapters, $2.99, down from $19.99. It's an adventure point-and-click game, 3.67 rating. So if that, I think it's a 20 to 25 hour completion. So if that's something you'd like, that's pretty cheap there. And then they've also got some Ubisoft game show and board games for $5, if that's something that you guys like as well.
I meant to ask you earlier, is living in Montana for 4 years how you got the name Wild West?
Yeah, well, it was part of it.
I'm a geography major.
No, it was from high school, some high school friends, some play on some other stuff.
Oh. So my town is totally all the way in the west. All the way.
I'd be the farthest west.
It's more west than anything else. And maybe north. Neo, you have any sale games?
Yeah, so a couple of sort of Metroidvanias. The game Itora, which does not have the Metroidvania tag, but Awu says it's a good enough fit that it should get it. So it is 50% off right now, $10 down from $20. So if any of you Vayner people want to play it and then submit a discrepancy that to try to get the Metroidvania tag added to it, I'm going to be picking that one up, and hopefully I can add my voice to that. I don't know if there is a dispute filed yet, but once there is and I play it, I will be adding myself to that. Another game that has the Metroidvania tag on Steam but not on Xbox is Rain World. It is 20% off right now, $20 down from $25, I believe. So yeah, similar to Itora. Play it and you could file a dispute to try to get Metroidvania added to it. I don't really know anything about that game, but I have seen it in a number of Metroidvania lists. So you know, I think I'll have to look into it more to say definitively whether I believe it should. But from what I've seen from a couple of screenshots and people talking about it, I think it probably should have the Metroidvania genre tag as well. And last thing, Vayner regarded, but not on Xbox, the spiritual successor to Sheepo, which is Islets, spelled Islets, but it's pronounced Islets, it's from the same creator, is free on the Epic Game Store right now. Although by the time this is posted, you may only have a couple hours left. So go pick that up if that is something that you want to play, because that game has only had a very minimal sale on Xbox, unfortunately. But once it does have a Xbox sale, I'm going to be picking that one up as well. But who knows when that's going to happen. And then not in the realm of Metroidvanias, there is a first-person 3D puzzle-solving game kind of along the lines of The Witness or Numa or what was that other one? Turing Test. Those kind of like physics puzzlers, first person games. I really like those. And so the one called Discolored is on sale right now. $3.50 down from $10. It is a very quick completion. It's like I think it's a half an hour to an hour. But those sort of first person puzzle, physics puzzlers. I love those type of games. So I'm going to be picking that one up as well.
Yeah, I think I did that.
Yeah, that was a good one. I have a recommendation to not be colorblind if you're going to play that game.
Oh, yeah, it is all. I think the game starts out in black and white. Heavily on colors. Yeah, I think it starts out in black and white, and as you progress through it, you unlock additional colors, kind of like Hue, which was a 2D side-scrolling puzzle platformer, which was a great game as well. I really like that one, but I think it uses color in a similar way, but in a 3D space. So yeah, if you are colorblind, I could definitely see that being an issue. I do not know if it has any accessibility colorblind settings. So that's something to be aware of if you have trouble with colors.
Yeah, not that I recall. Is your favorite Vayner Escape from Tethys worth buying?
Oh, yeah. I didn't mention that, but yes, Escape from Tethys is on sale as well. Which is, I believe, off the top of my head, because I don't have it pulled up right now, is 50% off, $5 down from 10, or is it $10 down from 20?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right.
$5 down from 10. It's a relatively quick completion. I think it's probably about an 8 to 10 hour completion. I played it a few years ago. It was perfectly fine. Wasn't really anything stand out about it, but it wasn't terrible. Mm-hmm. So if you want another quick, relatively easy Metroidvania completion, you can pick that one up. Yeah, it wasn't bad. Just wasn't really anything stand out. I put it like kind of right in the middle of the road.
Got it. Seems perfect for me.
And I know Rocker Dude talked about that a couple years ago because I think he was. Yes, I think he had it sure before it was on the store. I think he got a review copy of it, so he talked about it basically before anyone.
Yes. Thanks. Sometimes you. All right. As luck would have it, on the day Koosh is not here, we got lots of Game Pass news.
Yeah.
So we're going to have Wild West tell us what we've learned.
Yeah, even with Koosh on air quotes vacation, he still wanted to make sure we talked about all of the Game Pass news. So, out now, we have Ark Survival Ascended, survival open world. Could be a 1 to 2 hour completion with console commands, although I did see something that there might be an issue with the completion being locked behind some DLC that's extremely expensive. So, I saw that on a Mecha thing. So, yeah, I think he reached out to the developer to get some clarification on that and everything. So, just a warning, I don't know what they'll do with that, but maybe wait to see how that shakes out before starting it. We also have F1 23 Sim Racing Automobile Sports, 120 to 150 hours. Super Hot Mind Control Delete, Cloud Console and PC, first person shooter, 10 to 12 hours. Turbo Golf.
Previously on Game Pass and is returning.
Nice. We also have Turbo Golf Racing, Arcade Racing Automobile, 20 to 25 hours. Lego 2K Drive on cloud and console. That comes out tomorrow, although I saw Rocker Dude said it might be installable now. Well, it will be installable now when this podcast comes out. So that is Arcade Racing Automobile Open World, 60 to 80 hours. Little Gator Game, which Rocker also talked about, on cloud, console, and PC. That'll come out April 4th. And that's a 4 to 5 hour game. And then also the one I'm looking forward to is EA Sports PGA Tour Cloud PC Xbox Series XS EA Play coming to EA Play, excuse me, on April 4th. Sports Golf, 20 to 25 hours. So those will all be out by the time the podcast drops, unless there's an issue there. On April 9th, we get Kona on cloud and console. Adventure, 8 to 10 hours, and it has a walkthrough.
That was also previously on Game Pass and is returning.
Yeah, I think I bought it when it was on sale one time, and I enjoyed it. I gave it 3.5. It was a good game. I think I played it over an afternoon or two afternoons, and it was a good game.
Yeah, I bought it, and then it came to Game Pass too. It was darn.
Yeah. Releasing on April 9th, we also have Botany Manor going straight into Game Pass. It's cloud, PC, and Xbox Series XS. It's an adventure puzzle game. April 11th, we have Shadow of the Tomb Raider Definitive Edition, cloud, console, and PC. Third-person shooter, stealth, platformer, 40 to 50-hour walkthrough with a walkthrough, and it contains all the DLC. I highly recommend that game. I love that series. Very good. So definitely check out that one.
What if you haven't played the one before that? Because that's the second one in the rebooted series, right?
That's the third one.
Oh, that's the third one.
It's the last one, I believe. Okay. So I'm fairly certain it's been a while since I played them, because I played most of those when they came out right away. But I believe it is the third one. So 2018, it looks like it came out.
Yeah, you know what? I think the second one was Rise of the Tomb Raider.
I think they're different.
But yes. would you recommend playing that one, even if you haven't played the first two?
I would recommend playing in order, because she kind of goes, they do a good job with the arc, and they kind of go from her being, kind of figuring out, who her dad was, who her past was and everything, or what her family's past was and everything, to the third one being more confident and, abilities wise. And plus there is something that does happen in the second one, which kind of makes her different in the third one. So okay. I would recommend playing them in order. They're, most of them I think are all 40 to 50 hours. So not too big of a time sinks. They do have some DLC on both of them, I believe, the previous two, but nothing. The first one has multiplayer that I boosted with a friend. The second one has some challenges that you have to do in the DLC. And then I don't remember the third one, but
I picked up the bundle one time. I think it was like on Black Friday sale, where I got all three of them with all their DLC for like $20. So that's probably a good way. Wait for a good sale to get all three of them in a bundle if you don't have them and are wanting to go through them in order.
And I thought I heard that they might. I might have heard that since Amazon is doing the next game, that they might bundle everything together and release it somehow with possibly some new achievements and everything, kind of like a remaster, even though they're not that old, but just putting them in a bundle and upscaling everything to 4K and whatnot. But I haven't heard that. That might be something out there. I thought I saw something somewhere. But anyways, getting back on track, we've got April 16th, Harold Halibut on cloud, PC, and Xbox Series XS adventure game. April 23rd, I know M is very excited for Ayuden Chronicles 100 Heroes, role-playing turn-based. Okay. April 25th, we have another Crab's Treasure, action-adventure, Souls-like. And it looks like that one will have some accessibility options, so we'll see if that will affect achievements or not. April 26th, we have Manor Lords strategy, and Steam also classifies it as a city builder, so we'll have that one. And that completes our coming to Game Pass. The dreaded leaving Game Pass, April 15th, is the cutoff date for the following games. We have Amnesia Collection, survival horror collection genre, 15 to 20 hours, and it has a walkthrough. We also are losing Amnesia Rebirth, survival horror, 12 to 15 hours. Elle mentioned this, Back for Blood is leaving, first-person shooter, action horror, 150 to 200 hours with three DLC packs. So if you think that you can't complete that, definitely look at that sale that he mentioned and recommended. Phantom Abyss is leaving. It's a platformer rogue light, 25 to 30 hours. Research and Destroy, third-person shooter, strategy, turn-based, 20 to 25 hours. And Soma, action-adventure, 6 to 8 hour completion there, and it has a walkthrough. And I believe the developer on that one said to play it on the easy mode, story mode, without any of the jump scares or horror aspects of it. So definitely look at that if you're interested in it.
Kind of like Kona. I bought that when it was on sale, and then it came to Game Pass, but I still haven't played it. And I've heard really good things about Soma, so I'm looking forward to getting to that at some point. But yeah, it does have one of those like turn off jump scare sort of options if you are a baby when it comes to that kind of stuff, like I am. I'm gonna try it without it, but I may end up turning that on because I don't like jump scares. So, but I've heard from people that it is a very good game. So I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, I think I bought it when it was $2 or $3, and same thing. I just haven't gotten around to it yet. Heard good things, and yeah, even the developer came out and said, yeah, the best way to play it is to turn that off and just enjoy the story. So.
Yeah, I think the first time I heard about it, it was because I am a big fan of Subnautica. I've played a lot of both of them, and I spent a lot of time on the Subnautica subreddit, and people were talking about other games along those lines, and someone mentioned Soma, so that's when I started looking into it, and then I saw it go on sale, so I picked it up. So I don't really know much about it, but I think it takes place underwater, kind of like Rapture from Bioshock, from what I think I read.
Yep. But yeah,
stop talking about that game. We need to talk more about Soma because, of course, we did a big thing on Soma. I think Walker Pale led the charge. If you look up Soma on the podcast search or on YouTube, there's a few part series. And yeah, we talked about Soma. It was kind of like done in book club fashion. It was called H101 Game Club. That's what it was. So you played like the first hour and a half, and it gives you a cutoff point, and then you play up to that point, and then you follow along with the game club.
Oh, that's right. I forgot that you guys did that. Yeah. I remember talking about that
4 years ago.
And I remember hearing about that, and I was like, oh, when I play the game, I'm gonna do that, but I totally forgot about that, so I'm glad you reminded me. When I do play through it, I'm gonna try to do that.
Yes. And there's Dinobo, Carpe Adam, and Benel72 are guests on there as well. And I believe there's two different options, and then you could put it on what do you call it, where you can't die, I guess.
Yeah,
you just put it on that one, which is fine because this game is all about story and atmosphere, and worrying about challenge would be just unnecessary and silly. All right. So the gamer tag challenge is something we usually talk about with Mr. Kush Moose, and he is not here. But we can all agree that I finally won the Gamertag Challenge in March.
Stop trying to make Spinal a thing.
Wait, what? How dare you? You're not allowed to Koosh.
Koosh paid him to say that.
Koosh. You're really on the beach?
But, it is me, Koosh, with a nerdy Neo voice filter.
Wow. Sounds pretty good. May as well get a head start and read about April's Gamer Tech Challenge, which is April Fools. But it's not really an April Fools joke. It's spelling out April Fools. So the wildcard game is any new achievement or previous completion in a Game Pass game. the bonus is to spell up to 5 TA genres using the first letter of games not in that genre. And the bonus is there's the same picture. Spell 1 TA genre using only games in that genre. All the details are in the GTC April Fools channel. This may or may not be real, but I think it's real because, Koosh wouldn't lie to us. No April Fools jokes here, sir. As long as we all know who won. Oh, and the patron drawing winner is... will be announced next week on our live show. Tricked you. All right, we're going to go to Brad Camp. And we're going to have... change things up a little bit. Have Wild West go first.
All right, in completion, we have Oz... Buffanatic with 400 completed games. Facial LaFleur with 700 completed games. And Redemption Denied with 3,500 completed games. In streaks, we have Punk Statics V1 with a 50-day achievement win streak. Johnny Delicious with a 250-day achievement win streak. RPG Davey with a 350-day win streak. Daytime Comet with 350-day achievement win streak. Junior Mario 2004 with a 650-day achievement win streak. Surf Biscuit with 1,650-day achievement win streak. Unky Tim Fu with 2,700-day achievement win streak. Prue with 2,950-day achievement win streak. And Mad Eye Pad Eye with 4,050-day achievement win streak.
In a gamer score, we have Lee Howard has reached a 200,000 gamer score. Myself, Nerdy Neo, a.k.a. Neo21, has reached a gamer score of 700,000, which I just hit a couple nights ago. DJ Zibbyman has reached 800,000 gamer score. Logic Slayer has reached 950,000 gamer score. My fellow panelist here, Big L, has reached a milestone of 1,200,000 gamer score. Z Drunken Monkeys, also in my state of California, has reached 1.5 million gamer score, and Redemption Denied has reached 4.5 million gamer score. Good Lord, that is crazy. Congrats.
In leaderboards, Westlander Joe is in top 500 of Georgia Achievements 1 leaderboard and True Achievement leaderboard for RPGs. Kitty Skies is second in Wales gamer score. A Rhetoric is now in the top 50 of the TA leaderboard for role playing and turn based. And Dave Bottom is now in the top 50 of the gamer score leaderboard for Metroidvanias.
Woot woot.
Which I wish he would talk more in the Vayner channel. Talk to us, Dave. Tell us what you've been playing.
Yeah, he did pretty well for March. I think I'll be mentioning him a couple times in the March Vayner summary, which I'll be recording after we're done here.
No good, but we're not going to be done anytime soon because I thought of more questions to ask you.
Oh, cool.
Your name, Neo, did you mention why you are Neo and if there's any correlation to a certain movie of the 90s?
Yeah, no, you did not, but it does. Yeah, so...
I imagine it does.
Yeah, so as I mentioned earlier, I got my Xbox 360 in February of 2006 when I was in college, and I couldn't go online with it because of the college's network was locked down to prevent it. So I had to take it to our IT department and have them set it up for me. And they're like, hey, what do you want your gamer score to be? So your gamer tag to be. I was like,
hack.
I hadn't thought about that.
You outed yourself on the podcast.
4.6 million, suck it, Red.
What do you want your gamer score to be? I didn't know I had an option. No, they're like, so, they signed me up for Xbox Live because I didn't have it on the original Xbox. So they're like, hey, what do you want your gamer tag to be? And I was like, oh, I hadn't thought about it. So I use Neo for a lot of stuff online, given that The Matrix is my single favorite movie of all time, which just turned 25 this last weekend. And I replied, I was on Twitter and someone mentioned movies turning certain ages, and I was like, The Matrix turned 25 this weekend, which was March 31st, and I replied with saying that Matrix turned 25 with the gif of Matt Damon from Saving Private Ryan, where it fades from him being young to him being old. So it's like, God, I can't believe that movie is 25 years old. But yeah, that's my favorite movie. And so I appended my basketball number from high school onto that, which was 21. And so I tried Neo 21. And as I said, that was already taken. So he suggested, he's like, what a lot of people do is if the what they like is already taken, they put like a letter at the beginning or you know, at the beginning or end. So they're, oh, let's put X's at the beginning and end because that's a cool letter. And so I tried that and it worked. And I've been with that gamer tag ever since.
Now, I have a fun fact about the Matrix. Whenever I get a new, whenever I need to test out my home audio system, ooh, I always use the Matrix.
The lobby shooting spree, I hope so.
No, actually, the shooting, the famous slow-mo shooting part, because it goes from left to right, and like, for surround sound purposes.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
It's another another good scene is Ready Player One, when the first race they do for the key. That's a really good one. That's the one I used for my when I was testing my surround sound, and it was amazing.
Okay.
I'll have to keep that in mind.
I did see that movie. I vaguely remember the part that you're talking about.
It's just good because there's a bunch of cars trying to get to the end. And so, you like Elle was saying, it's just cars sound shifting as the camera's moving around, so you can just hear it kind of going up and down, front and back to the on the different speakers and everything. So,
cool.
Now, are you a defender of the sequels, or think they sucked as much as everyone else?
I am a defender of the sequels, which includes 2 and 3. There is no fourth Matrix movie. I don't think that Reloaded and Revolutions are anywhere near as good as the original, but I don't think they suck like everyone says. I still think they are good movies, just not great like the first one.
What about the Animatrix?
Oh, I love the Animatrix. Great stuff. The Final Flight of the Osiris, which is the like CG one with the computer animated graphics, that was probably one of the first like short films or something that I saw that was rendered like that in a realistic setting that wasn't like Toy Story. So I love that one. And I forget what the story is called, but the one that basically fills in the gaps from where we're at today in our real world to where the Matrix picks up and gives the whole history of like the robot uprising and how that all came about. Fascinating. Great story stuff in there. Some of them are not as good as others, but I definitely think if you like the Matrix at all, I definitely recommend watching all of them. It's not terribly long. I think all 5 or 6 stories is like an hour and a half, all put together. But yeah, the Animatrix is great.
Do you ever play the game? Enter the Matrix, right?
So there was Enter the Matrix was the first one. That was the one where you go back and forth between playing as Niobe and Ghost. Yeah. I did play that one because that looks so cool. I never played Max Payne. So Enter the Matrix was the first like bullet time game I played. I liked it, but I played it at the time. If I went back and played it now, I don't know how well that game has aged. But I did also really like the Path of Neo, which is unfortunately not backwards compatible and so is locked to the original Xbox, which I don't even have an original Xbox anymore. So I have the game, but I have no way to play it. It's great because the ending of the movie doesn't make for a great video game. So when you get to that point in the game, it actually pauses and two little like animated characters pop up that are voiced by, I think it was the Wachowskis. Or Wachowskis. I never remember how to say whether the CH is a K or a CH sound. But either way, the game pauses and they basically come out and say that, the movie doesn't really make for a great ending. So we're going to give you like a good boss fight that does make for a good game. And so you end up fighting a giant Agent Smith, and even picks up glasses off of a billboard, which was great to add some levity into the game. And that was a lot of fun. I would love to go back and play it again, but like I said, I have no way of playing it now since it's not backwards compatible.
Where there's a will, there's a way. That's what I always say.
I've never looked into it, but there's probably an Xbox emulator out there somewhere. I've just never looked for it.
I mean, you could just play an old console, you know, on an older TV or with an adapter or something.
Yeah. Then I have to go get an original Xbox again.
But I know you won't play anything without achievements anyway.
That's so not true. I've played Subnautica like 10 times after getting all the achievements. And like I said earlier, I spent like 120 hours on Satisfactory and it doesn't have any achievements. Heck, I just, after my Metroidvania ranking stream, I went back and I played through Mummy Demastered again, which I already have all the achievements in because it had been too long since I played it. And the other night after I beat Mummy Demastered, I started up a new run through Shadow Complex, which I have all the achievements in as well. So I do play things for fun occasionally.
Have you played Metroid Prime Remaster yet?
I don't have a Switch, so I have not played the remaster.
Whoa.
But I do plan to either get a Switch or a Switch 2, depending on when we get some news about that, because I am very, very much looking forward to playing Metroid Dread. That's the only Metroid game I haven't played. Well, that's not true. I haven't played Samus Returns either because that was a 3DS only game and I don't have a 3DS either. But I've played all the Metroid Prime games and I've played all of the mainline non-Metroid Prime Metroid games.
Well, I would recommend Metroid Prime for you especially.
Yes. I
quality of life.
The remaster. They did some
good stuff. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, I know you. I know you like it.
Once I get a Switch, I'll probably get the Metroid Prime remaster as well. Because yeah, I would love to play through. I'm hoping that they remaster all three of them because I would love to play through all of them again because they are excellent games. I love them.
They will. They will. For sure. All right. Well, thank you for joining us, Neo.
Yeah, it was a blast. Thanks for having me on. Just let me know anytime. I'd be happy to come back.
I mean, you've been plugging all night long, but go ahead and plug whatever you got to plug before you leave us.
Yes. So if you, I started, like I said earlier, I started my YouTube channel back at the end of June. And basically all I do, I occasionally stream games, but pretty much all I do on my channel is I talk about games. I've got a number of different streams. I've got my party chat every other Saturday where we talk about fun things like the patron questions. I've actually borrowed some of the patron questions occasionally to use for my own stream. And I think I returned the favor by bringing one of my questions from my party chat to have for a patron question here. I do an open mic typically every Thursday night where I just have someone on. We just talk about video games.
Do you sing?
Not that type of open mic. It's more of like we don't have any topics planned. We just talk about games and go wherever the conversation takes us. And so that's where the open mic concept came from. And about every other week, I do the stream I just mentioned earlier, Top 5. And the next one is going to be on Top 5 Video Game Soundtracks. That's going to be 2 weeks from tonight on April 16th. So, yeah.
Might want to play some Final Fantasy games before that.
And
I saw that coming from a mile away.
Obviously I won't have any Final Fantasy games on my list, but I'm sure some of my panelists will, because that is a popular franchise, and there what I do know is that it does have a lot of good music. And then me and another guy who is a big achievement hunter, Dude1286, we do a monthly stream where we just talk about the achievements we hunted every month, and that'll be this Friday at 4:30 Pacific. That's called Achievement Chasers.
So he either likes the Big Lebowski or Dude, Where's My Car?
I think he is a big fan of Dude, the Big Lebowski.
I figured.
So yeah, lots of video game related topics.
You can invite this Big L guy on your show too. He'd be good.
Yeah. That's kind of the idea behind the open mic. If anyone ever wants to come on and just talk video games with me, we'll make it happen. Let me know. I just love talking video games.
All right. You can invite Wild West too. He's a good guy.
Absolutely.
Despite what Koosh says.
If you guys want, let me know. We'll make it happen. I love talking.
Awesome. Awesome. Awesome.
Volunteering my time again.
Yep, we're going to do all of MLB 24 for me and then for Michelle. Sweet. Alrighty.
And of course, I also run the Year of the Vayner contest. But you guys already knew that.
Oh, yes. Yes. Year of the Vayner. And I was going to ask what game got drawn, but I guess there'll be a segment on it right after this.
Yes.
So stay tuned and class dismissed. Bye, everybody.
Good night. Hello again, AH101. This is Nerdy Neo, a.k.a. Neo21. And it was great fun being on the podcast this week. Shout out to Big L for inviting me on. And I look forward to coming on again in the future. Had a great time. But now it is time for the Vayner summary for the month of March. So there were a total of 17 completions, and the Vayner of the month was Astalon, Tears of the Earth. And there were no duplicate completions. All 17 completions were different games. Icefire TN had the most completions in March with 9, where 10 is the most completed in one month, so almost tied the record. And in second place was David Bodum with 3 completions. The April Vayner of the month is Castlevania Advance Collection, which has 4 Castlevania games from the Game Boy Advance era, which include Circle of the Moon, Aria of Sorrow, Harmony of Dissonance, and Dracula X. The game has a 40 to 50 hour completion time, a 1.88 ratio, and a rating of 4.57 stars from the community. Couple of notable shoutouts for the month. Icefire TN is now top 20 in the Metroidvania Played Games leaderboard. Icefire is also third in the US TA Vayner leaderboard, and Jay Huns was the 5th person to complete Scatfold Usurper. For these stats, in first place, unsurprisingly with all those completions, was Icefire TN with 27,466. That is the second highest TA earned in a single month since the contest started, a little over 3 years ago, right behind Skeptical Mario's 29,000 this last December. In second place was Jay Huns with 5,955 TA, and in third was Dave Bodum with 4,512 TA. For gamer score earned, in first was Icefire with 11,955. In second was Jay Huns with 1,750. And in third was Dave Bodum with 1,629. And for achievements earned, in first place was Icefire again with 371 achievements. In second was Dave Bodum with 92. And in third was Jay Huns with 52. That does it for the March wrap-up. We'll see you again in another month for the April summary.
Keanu Reeves has an impressive negative $32,000.
I know Kung Fu.
For the last time, no, you don't.